Welcome to Webcamps TV. I'm your host, Brady Gaster, and our other host, Corey Fowler, is out this week. It's probably a recurring theme you've picked up on. One of us is in, one of us is out. We just cover each other. So that's that. So Corey's out this week. And before we get started with our wonderful guests, Dan and Yao, we're going to talk about some awesome web API stuff. We have some new tricks up our sleeve we want to announce today. So before we get to that, I have a couple of other things I want to talk to you about. And one of those is a tour that we have that's going on right now called the Webcamps Tour. You probably heard us talk about this in other shows. As you'll see right down here, myself and Scott Hunter, our fearless leader, OASP.net, are going to be in Dallas, Texas on April 5th delivering webcamps. So you can talk about all the ASP.net good stuff, SignalR, Office apps, Windows Azure websites, web API, the stuff that you're going to learn about today, and lots of other good stuff. So if you're in Dallas on April 5th, come out and see Scott and I. If you're in any of these other towns on these days, feel free to come out and check out Corey and or Steve or Mads or any of these other wonderful people, because they'll actually be presenting webcams information all over the globe. So if you get a second, take a peek at this. The website is devcamps.ms, has all the information about the webcamps, the office camps, and all other good kinds of camps that we have coming up for developers in different areas. So that's that. Next thing I want to tell you about is something that Scott Goo blogged about earlier this week, and this is a new little feature that we've added to the Windows Azure website deployment model. I'm in here right now in a quick deployment demo site that I just created right before the show started. And right here I'm going to go over and click Setup Deployment from the source control. And you'll see here's a list of all the different providers. You've seen most of these before, TeamCity, CodePlex, GitHub, and there's a new one, Dropbox. So you can actually deploy directly from a Dropbox folder. So you could just put all your web files or your solution directly in a Dropbox folder, and you can actually map that Dropbox folder to your Windows Azure website. So you can deploy directly from your Dropbox right here in the portal. We've also got Bitbucket, which was in there before. But now we actually support Bitbucket with Mercurial as well. So it's not just Git anymore, you can also do Mercurial now too. So I want to point these out. These are some new deployment tricks that you've got at your disposal. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and close down the portal. I'm going to open up a previous show that we recorded with our good friend here, Yao. Yao wrapped up the Web API tour. It was kind of a couple of episodes that we did of webcamps where we talked about all the new stuff in Web API. We're going to talk about more new stuff today. With Dan and Yao, some more goodness with Web API, some brand new stuff. And I think that Dan's probably going to introduce our fourth guest. You can see the three of us are over there in the studio. And out here somewhere in non-studio land, we have a gentleman that Dan is going to introduce to you right now. And then I'm going to actually go and interview him outside the studio, and we're going to put everything together magically for you. Dan, you want to go ahead and introduce this new idea?
Yeah, sure. The news is that we've added a cool new feature to Web API, mm-hmm. to ASP.NET Web API. It's full support for cores, cross-origin resource sharing.
Okay.
And this is a technology that lets you, from a browser, make requests to other origins than your point of origin. So you can make requests to other sites.
Nice.
The new standard is supported by all the modern browsers. And because we're a services platform, mm-hmm. We wanted to, of course, support this standard. And you mentioned Mr. Allen. Mm-hmm. We looked out and we saw that Brock had actually already done a really fantastic implementation of cores. He originally did it for the ThinkTexture guys. He added it to the ThinkTexture Identity Model GitHub project, and we saw it. And we've worked with Brock a lot in the past. And he's an MVP. He's an ASP.NET insider, and we liked what he did. We liked the work that he did. And since now we're open source and we accept third-party contributions, we approached him and said, hey, we really like that stuff. Can we get that into our core runtime? Can we get first-class core support into ASP.NET Web API?
Cool.
Can you contribute it? And he said, sure, yeah, let's do that. And so he did an initial pull request to our site. And if you're interested in doing this, you can go to our site. We have documentation about how you can do pull requests, how you can contribute the paperwork you need to fill out, and so forth. But it's a fairly simple and straightforward thing to do. And then we looked at his initial submission and handed that off to our illustrious dev here, Yao. And Yao, iterated with Brock on the design. They did some refining and improvements in a separate fork until finally got pulled into the product. So now we have a full first-class Cores implementation.
Awesome.
It's pretty amazing.
Nice. I just actually pulled up the CodePlex repository. I think this is the right one, ASP.NET Webstack.CodePlex.com.
That's it. That's cool. The one. So that's where MVC is. That's where ASP.NET Web API is. One of the cool things is we did this first-class support for Web API, mm-hmm. but the core of the Cores implementation is actually a separate factored piece. Mm-hmm. So you can take that piece and you can also roll it for MVC. You can roll it for any platform that you care to do it for. The core engine is actually a reusable piece.
Nice.
So that's available. And I just think it's a great example of how being open source, accepting third-party contributions, we can now collaborate with the community in ways that we never could before. So
nice.
It's pretty exciting.
Speaking of collaboration, through the wonders of the internet and link technology, we're actually going to go and interview Brock right now. So what we're going to do just to symbolize this is we're going to march Brock over here and put him right here with us. Hello, Brock. So without further ado, I'm going to go and interview Brock now, and we'll be right back.
Hi. And welcome, guys. As we just talked about, we're going to be interviewing Brock Allen here. We're chatting over link. Brock is working out of his home office in...
I live in outside of Providence, Rhode Island.
Providence, Rhode Island. Okay, cool. Yep. I'm from North Carolina. You can probably hear the accent.
Yeah, a little
East
bit.
Coast guys. So, but hey, just tell us kind of how this contribution thing happened. Like, how did Dan get in touch with you? Who got in touch with you? What was the contribution cycle like? As an open source guy, what was your feeling on it? Yada, yada, yada.
Right. So about a year ago, I work on an open source or several open source security projects. One of them is something called ThinkTecture Identity Model, and I work on that with my friend of mine, Dominic Bayer. He's in Germany. And he convinced me that cores was something that people are going to really be dealing with, mm-hmm. and need support for, and there was no built-in support, especially in Web API. And so he convinced me to go and add that as a feature to our security library. And so I went and added it, and it turned out to be quite a popular aspect of that library. We got tons of downloads. It's up on NuGet, and I don't know, 15 or 20,000 downloads. And so people were using it. They needed this support. And then probably 6 or 9 months after that, Dan reached out to me and said, hey, we need to work on cores for the next version of and asked me if I'd be willing to contribute the library that I had already worked on and contribute it to the ASP.NET web stack. So I was happy to do that, I did the whole pull request thing, and Microsoft accepted that contribution. And then I spent about 2 or 3 weeks working with Yao on refining the implementation, trying to figure out how to make it fit really well with the Web API framework so that it feels kind of natural along with the way everything else works with Web API. Mm-hmm. So he and I worked for several weeks, and he did a lot of the work, but I worked with him. We had lots of meetings over link, looking at code, discussing ways to go about doing things, and it was really, really great experience. Those guys were totally nice. They were really gracious to work with me, and I think the whole library came out better, and I'm glad that it's built in now in API.
Nice. So you submitted a pull request. Yao, Dan, the rest of the team got a hold of it. They took a look at it. They said, hey, we really like this. We want to bring this in. And then you guys kind of started this collaborative effort to enhance it, make it better, make it like kind of fit with our signatures and that sort of stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
Cool.
I mean, it definitely, when we built it from our open source library, we had a certain set of assumptions about it. And, those were okay for how we put it out there. But I knew that once it was going to be part of the Microsoft code base, that it really did need, a finer tooth comb to go over it and really, like I said, make it look sort of, proper from the framework itself.
Nice. So from your experience working with other open source projects, working in an online collaborative manner with people all over the globe. Would you say that your experience working with the Web API team was kind of synonymous with that? Were they following the open source spirit, you know, yada yada?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I said they were super gracious for the contribution, which I kept getting surprised about over and over again. Almost every email was sort of like, you know, Brock, thanks again for your contribution, and it's been great working with you. And so, like I said, I kept being surprised by how nice and appreciative everyone on the ASP.NET team was working with me.
Nice. Other than the fact that they constantly tease me and stuff, I've found the same thing to be true. They're a pretty gracious bunch of guys, so it's been good. They had a lot of really nice things to say in the studio about you.
Okay, thanks, guys.
So they have really enjoyed working with you. And without further ado, I know that the developer audience is really looking forward to seeing what you contributed and how it's evolved. So we're going to go ahead and cut this interview and go on to the demo. But on behalf of the ASP.NET team and everybody at Microsoft, I want to thank you, Brock, for your contribution. And it's very exciting to see it coming in.
Yeah, thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.
Cool. Take care, man.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
And now for our feature presentation.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for that, Brock. Thanks a lot for the time. I think now that he's sort of introduced the idea and you've introduced him, I think we both want to introduce Yao, who you've seen on the show before. He gave some great demos on some other Web API stuff. And now I think he's going to go a little bit deeper into the core support and show us actually how to use it.
Yep.
Cool.
Great. So yeah, let me give you a little bit of background on why we need this feature, right? So most of the browsers today have this same origin policy, which you know only allow you to make requests within the same origin. So for example, if you have a single page application where you try to make an Ajax request to your service, and if you try to make the request to a service that is hosted on a different domain, then the browser will actually block that request and it will not work. So what you know, Course does is basically it's the specification that allows you to bypass that kind of policy and define a bunch of interaction how the server and the browser should interact to handle that securely.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So
rather than having to proxy it back to yourself and then make an outbound call on the server, you can actually just make a call directly to that server from within the actual web page.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Nice. Exactly.
And the server has very fine-grained control over you know how much it wants to expose in that cross-origin type way. That's
cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So let me show you a demo right now. So what I have here is you know our pre-standard default API project.
Mm-hmm.
You know has a value controller. Let me just start up this the service. And on the client side, what I'm going to show you is the test client I showed you before.
Mm-hmm.
What's cool about this now is in the newest version, I can just paste the absolute URL into the URL box here. So what it does, you know, now this guy is going to make an agent request to this URL. Notice that this test client is actually hosted on Azure. So when we actually try to make that request, it's going to trigger, you know, a cross-origin request.
Okay.
And by default, obviously, it will fail as we will see now. So you see there's a network error, right?
Gotcha.
So let's see what...
Not allowed.
Yes.
Different origin.
Let's see what's happening here, right? So so we can look at the console output, mm-hmm. and we can see exactly what happened. Like when it's trying to make the request to this URL,
mm-hmm.
it requires course
okay.
in this case. So it didn't found you know the header and obviously it's denied.
Right.
So let's see how we can enable the feature on the server side to allow this kind of request. Now let's go back to our service. So what I did here is you know added the reference to our two new assembly that we're introducing. So system.web.course, which is the core component that Dan was talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
which has absolutely no dependency on system.web or web API,
okay.
which you can reuse. And we have the system.web.http.course, which is basically the programming model that we have on top of API to enable cores.
Gotcha.
I think that core piece is actually going to prove to be really useful. I know a lot of our customers have gone off and rolled their own core support, right. And this will be a reusable component now that they can just take advantage of.
Nice. Is that going to be a part of, in the future, when I do an add new project and create a new web API project, is that going to be brought in, or is that going to be a separate NuGet package that I have to pull down?
Certainly it'll be available as NuGet. You can always add it to any project you want. Okay. You know, we're obviously working on template experiences so that you get a great experience out of the box, and it should be really easy to enable cores.
Cool.
I think that's definitely the goal.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Good to hear.
Yep, so this is right now checked into our Coplex site. It's not ready for our next release, so it's not we're not officially releasing this yet.
Right.
Great, so.
It's preview. You can grab a nightly build, this is the current state.
Yeah.
Yep. So so once I have the reference to this to assembly, let's see how we can enable this, right? So let's go to the WebAPI config, and let's add the using statement for the namespace. The HTTP, the cores, and then all you need to do is come here to the config and say enable cores.
Get out of here. Really?
It's just that simple, Brady.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
So now you have final control on which controller you want to allow this kind of access.
Okay.
So you can come back here to the value controller, say, I just want to enable cores for this particular controller. Like, imagine you can have multiple controllers within the same service. And by having this attribute here, you will only enable the values controller to be accessed by browser from different origin.
That's awesome.
So let's see if it works, right? So let me run the service now. Remember that earlier it actually failed when we tried to make this request. Now let's make the exact same request, mm-hmm. right? See what happens. There you go. So we get back the response now.
More amazingness from Yao. That's awesome.
So let me show you that you can actually have this attribute on the action label. So we have a final control on which action to allow it. So I just removed it from the controller. So now instead of enabling every action on the controller, I just enabling this get with ID, right? So let me run this server again, and remember, if I make this request, it will fail now because I don't have the enable cores on the controller, and you get an error. But for get ID, we actually did enable the core support, right? So if I do /1, which is gonna call
find ID, yeah,
get ID, and we get back the result.
Nice.
So it provides a finer granularity on what resources you want to allow to access the.
That's awesome. That's really, really fat. By the way, the test client has been really valuable to me over the last week. I've been putting together some talks with Dan. Mm-hmm. It has been fantastic. It's really saved my butt on a couple of different occasions. I can just test it without having to open up any other program and do low-level pinging. It's nice.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Glad you like it.
Yeah, grab the test client. It's money. So just to clarify, do people have to put the code into the global file or into the web API config and into their controllers, or can they just do one or the other?
Have to be both.
Has to be both. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one is like the overall way of enabling cores, and the other one is basically control which controller action you want to enable that support.
Okay.
Right?
I think there's another global notion as well. Like within that that call, you could just say enable cores globally. Like, you can go. Like,
yeah. So basically, what I show you next is basically here you can, instead of declaring the attribute everywhere on different controller, what you can do is here say enable cores attribute, and that's it. And this will basically enable all the controllers.
Okay.
It's kind of like a global filter, like notion.
Yes. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That would probably not be something we would advise, though, because then you're just sort of opening your API up to the world.
Mm-hmm. You kind of need to know what you're doing. Like,
yeah.
Like this is a security feature. Right. Say the same origin policy is intended to protect you.
Right.
And if you decide to open yourself up to other, code from malicious sites that happens to be calling your service, that may or may not be okay. And so that's why you get very fine-grained control. just this resource, it's okay, or even just this action, it's okay.
Right.
Or you can even say even more fine-grained things like, you know, just requests with these headers, or you can say things about whether or not it's authenticated or not. All these are different pivots on how you can make sure your service is as locked down as it needs to be safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, next I'm going to show you a little bit deeper on, you know, what this enable course does. It has different settings that you can configure.
Okay.
It's completely implemented based on the core specification.
Okay.
It allows you to specify basically a list of origin that you will allow the browser to access.
Okay.
So I trust that guy, but I don't trust that guy over there, type of stuff.
So foo.com comes in and bar.com doesn't come in. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the
right.
idea?
Yeah. Exactly.
So let me actually give you a demo of this in action, right? So let me just come here and put the enable course on the controller.
Mm-hmm.
And notice that it's a property,
cool.
The origins is a property as in the attribute.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say I want to enable a particular domain to access this, right? So in this case, I'm going to enable this. Site that I have hosted on Azure.
Okay.
So now I'm only allowing this domain to access the resources that I have, right? So now if I come back here on the test client, if I make the request, it works, right?
Nice.
But now let me pull up another instance of a test client, which is running, you know, on localhost instead.
Right.
And as we saw earlier on the setting, we're only allowing the Azure side to be able to access it. So now, if we try to make the request within this test client,
mm-hmm.
we will expect the network failure that we saw earlier,
nice.
Because we're only allowing the Azure side to access it, right? So exactly what we saw.
Nice.
We get the exception back.
You need to give this guy a raise, man.
He is good.
He is good. He's really good. That's good stuff.
So if you submit stuff, you should request specifically to work with Yahoo. That's a good part of the class.
And
that's awesome.
And there's a lot of more settings that you can set, to control the granularity you want.
I should also say Brock Allen's really good too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he wrote the initial stuff. Thank you, Brock. It was.
Thank you, Brock.
Yeah, it
awesome
was
stuff.
Really
yes.
nice, you know, collaborating with Brock on this.
Nice.
And there's a lot more on this feature that I'm not going to show today. We actually allow you to extend the current implementation. So instead of, for example, grabbing the core setting as attribute,
mm-hmm.
you can actually extend our model to configure it through a centralized config
nice.
Object, right? So. And we're going to post a link to the documentation that
okay.
we have publicly. Let me show you this quickly here on kind of scenario that we have for course. So if we come here.
So our Coplex site, ASP.NET website, coplex.com, documentation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've started publishing our like design specs here.
Yep.
Cool.
So if you go to feature
nice.
Specification, this is the first one that I posted here.
Nice.
And if we click on this, you'll see, you know, a bunch of description on what this feature is, what assembly we have, and different scenario how you can enable the course attribute. And as part of this, you also talk about, another thing that I didn't show is basically disabling course. Basically, if you want to exclude a particular resource from, you know, the global settings,
gotcha.
you can do that as well.
Okay. So you can go all but this one method.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't let them log in from another server.
Mm-hmm.
They have to log in here or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of extensibility that you can implement to, for example, getting the settings from a database or getting a setting from a web.config instead of, you know, putting the hard code on the attribute.
Cool. Yeah, that was going to be my next question is, can I use web.config to set up the different sites that I'm going to allow to hit me?
Absolutely.
That's good.
Yes. So, and here, you know, basically I have a sample to show you exactly how you do that. So I just implemented a custom enable course attribute.
Cool.
And in here, I basically take the setting key And then I basically read the values from this setting in web.config and populate the origin from there.
Nice. That's awesome.
That's brilliant. That's
so fantastic. So then, you know, what you can do is declare this custom attribute.
Yeah.
Say, I want this label, internal origins. I want to basically retrieve the origin from this label.
Okay.
And what you can do then in your web.config, just come here and add this entry to the app settings.
Nice.
And you're all set.
Awesome.
So
this is like a comma delimited array of all the sites that you're going to let come in.
Yes.
That's
yes.
awesome.
And for example, and you can do, you know, you can use this extensibility hook to do whatever model
whatever
works
want.
Best for mm-hmm. you.
Nice.
Yeah, for example, retrieving from database and other stuff.
And so if you have hundreds of partner sites that are going to have access to your API from their sites, you can just put them in the database and mm-hmm. it'll read from there instead.
Yeah, sure. And also sometimes the partner might change dynamically, right? So one day right. you have partner X, Y, and then the next day they are no longer partner.
Right.
So
yeah, that does happen.
Mm-hmm. Great. So you know, another extensibility point that I talked about earlier is basically allow you to change how you configure the settings. So by default, we provide this attribute-based configuration where you declare the settings on as attributes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can basically extend that and provide a kind of a config object settings. So what I did here is basically, let me show you this sample. You can implement this iCores policy provider factory,
mm-hmm.
which you take your own configuration that I defined below here. And I just gonna take a bunch of URL and core setting mapping.
Nice.
So once I hook that up, I can come here and say course config. I want to add enable course for this particular controller.
Nice.
And I want this kind of setting for the user's controller, for example.
Cool.
Right? And then I just set the provider factory. And that's it. That's the only places that you need to configure. You don't have to go to the code and put the attribute there.
Nice.
Because not everyone likes attributes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Some
right.
people find them yeah. pretty offensive. You know? So this is a way, if you want to do it all in code, like maybe have like a... you know, a fluent API-like thing, mm-hmm. you can build one. It's
nice.
Totally possible.
And also another situation is when you actually don't have control on the controller,
yeah.
so you cannot basically modify the code, right?
Right.
So you can actually use this to
gotcha.
To configure.
Or like somebody else wrote the controllers, handed them over mm-hmm. to you, and you just have to glue everything together. Mm-hmm. This is a good way for you to be able to do
yes.
that. Nice.
Yeah, and a cool stuff, you know, for troubleshooting is that we have full integration with WebAPI tracing.
Nice.
So when you call enable course, will automatically add a bunch of tracers that will emit tracing informations.
Cool.
So basically, if you're debugging and you have our tracing package installed, you actually see these extra traces being
nice.
Emitted. To you know, they'll tell you exactly what's happening, like what course you know policy gets selected, what kind of policy you have, and what is the result that it returns. You know,
awesome.
for allowing the headers.
Nice.
So yeah, this is basically you know a quick overview of the feature.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. I know that there'll be a lot of people that want to play with this because it's been something that I've dealt with over the years. I want to call this API. I can't do it from a web page. Got to funnel it back to the server.
That's what we're hoping. I mean, like Yao said, this is preview. This is really early.
Right.
We're getting this, you know, early documentation spec-like documentation
right.
out so people can look at it.
Right.
Please try it out. If your scenario doesn't work, let us know. There's right. we're iterating on it now, and we really hope to get feedback on it.
Yes.
So go ahead and play with it.
And this is all obviously checked in already, so people could
checked in.
Pull nightly builds.
You
and
can
play.
Look at the code. You can pull a nightly build.
Cool.
We'll get some content out on how to do that and how
okay.
you can set up your you know project with a nightly build.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward.
Nice. And now that you have all the information on how to actually use Cores, thanks to these wonderful guys, you can start partying with that already.
Cores party.
Yeah, it's Cores party. Sorry. he made me promise not to make a joke, and then he goes and makes a joke. So that's awesome. I think you might have some other stuff you want to talk about as well.
I just wanted to mention that this is not the only case where we're doing this type of collaborations
okay.
with external folks. You know, if you have a contribution, please feel free to contact us. We're working with some other folks as well. Maybe you're familiar with the attribute routing project. Yep. It was implemented by Tim McCall. Mm-hmm. We're actually in a collaboration with him right now to integrate attribute routing deeply into ASP.NET Web API. It's a pretty exciting project. I think you'll start to see documentation and check-ins going related to that work. Okay. Cores is great. So not all browsers support cores. Like legacy browsers don't have full support for it. So there's other mechanisms like JSONP that we think are interesting to support as well. We're also looking at getting a contributor to do that as well. We're currently working with Ryan Riley on getting a JSONP implementation. So it's, we hope to see some momentum here. If you've got an interesting feature, please feel free to contact us. Work with us. We can, iterate on the design with you and see if it's a good fit for the runtime. Not everything's a good fit, but we can talk about it and then go from there.
Awesome. It's kind of like you did with Brock, which he talked about earlier, so that's good. Well, I have nothing else to ask you guys. Sometimes I don't even know what questions to ask you, but this is one of the circumstances I can actually... I've dealt with this problem before, so I can imagine using this pretty extensively in the very near future. We should probably have a meeting to talk about how I can show people how to use this in some of the demos.
Just like he did it. Copy, repeat.
Can I just take the video and put it on stage when I'm supposed to be there?
Sure.
That's good.
Yeah, you got my permission.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for coming on today. I know you guys are busy probably funneling all the incoming requests and pull requests and other meetings that I'm sure we book for you all the time.
Lots of stuff to do.
Lots of busy stuff to do. But thanks a lot for your time today, and thanks a lot for your time today. I hope that you enjoy this and that you give it a shot. And if you have any comments, please feel free to use the comments board right down below. And if you have any contributions that you want to make, as Dan said, go ahead and make them, because we'll totally take them in, look at them, and work with you to make them better, like we did with Brock.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Awesome. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
All right.